September 16th, 2011. It's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, I'm Jeff Eaton of Lullabot. This year, from October 12th to 14th, we're going to be holding the third annual Do It with Drupal conference. It's an event for people who are on the front lines of building and managing Drupal web projects, and we're really excited about it. There's going to be a lot of great speakers and a lot of great material that covers the process and the pragmatic nuts and bolts of building a site with Drupal and making it work beyond just code. It's going to be pretty cool. If you're interested, check out doitwithdrupal.com for more information. At the same time, there's a lot of really fascinating stuff going on behind the scenes in the Drupal community these days. Lots of core developers are taking stock of like the last several years and talking about the danger of developer burnout, and then also trying to figure out how they can improve the process of making and maintaining Drupal. This week, Lullabot's Kent Bai sat down with Sun and Ketch, two of the most visible figures in the current developer discussions, and myself, to figure out what's going on, what's behind all the drama. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Hello, this is Kent Bai, and today we're going to be talking about some discussions that have been going back and forth within the Drupal core development community of kind of expressing different frustrations that I guess have been building up for quite a while, and they've kind of struck a chord with a lot of other people and found some deep resonance. So we thought that it'd be worth getting together some of the key players and talking about some of these issues. And some of the topics we hope to cover today is making Drupal core more maintainable and what that means. Kind of looking back and doing a bit of a retrospective on the Drupal 7 release cycle and some of the frustrations that have kind of been building up to this point and kind of setting the context for everything. Another issue is this whole tension between is Drupal a product or is it a framework? And depending on whether or not you're focusing Drupal as a product or Drupal as a framework kind of becomes a decision point as to, you know, what is the future of Drupal and what is Drupal and should this go into Drupal core or should it be in contrib and or should this be an installation profile or a distribution? And so some of these questions about, you know, what is Drupal and is it a product or a framework or both? We'll give some higher level discussion around that issue and also talk about the unofficial framework initiative for Drupal 8 and also this hot topic of burnout in the Drupal community and some discussions that were happening at DrupalCon and how burnout kind of fits into this whole discussion. So those are kind of the big discussions that have been happening within the Drupal community. And we've tried to gather some of the key figures and players in some of these discussions. And so I'm joined here today with...
Yeah, I'm Nathaniel Ketchwell. I'm Ketch on Drupal.org.
I'm Jeff Eaton. I'm Eaton on Drupal.org.
And I'm Daniel Goodwin, Sun on Drupal.org.
Cool. So I guess this whole discussion got kicked off after Sun wrote the post called the Drupal Crisis, and it was right during the DrupalCon in London. And what was it exactly, Daniel, that you were trying to kind of communicate to all the different core developers that were up in London at the time?
It's one fundamental point that we have a maintenance problem in Drupal core. Yeah, we have too much workload to do. And we need to address that.
What sort of happened to get to this point?
There have been various decisions in the past, and I think no one is actually really guilty for that or to blame for. I think most of the decisions were actually community decisions, and we have added many things to core and also have long-term ballast from earlier versions in it, which hasn't really updated since Drupal 4, 7 or something. This is one half of the maintenance issue. The other half is that we are too low on core contributors that are able to do the or help with the maintenance work. So basically some time ago, I coined a term that is called code gardener. That's basically people who are reviewing all kind of patches and ensuring that the contained changes are correct and don't produce conflicts later on, and we understand the consequences of the changes. And this is basically our topmost problem, that we have many people who are doing patches, but we have only a handful of people who are actually reviewing what you are submitting.
Right. It sounds like it's at this sort of critical growth phase where, and this is also Drupal core, so Drupal 7 is out, and there seemed to be a whole lot of response to this discussion, and we're talking about stuff that's going to be in Drupal 8. There was quite a lot of interest that people still had, even though a lot of this stuff of talking about the Drupal crisis, as Sun had originally framed it, sort of generated all of this energy and thought. And one thing that Sun said that I thought was really interesting was that there are many more Drupal contributors who kept silent about their personal feelings for too long. In the end, we have several critical communication problems about fundamental topics in our community. And I'm just curious, like, that seemed to resonate with a lot of people about not sort of speaking about some of these tensions that have been going on. And that's, I think, what was very captivating for a lot of people. So why do you think that is, or why do you say that, Sun?
I think mostly these issues are perceptions, individual subjective perceptions of happenings that just simply pile up. And in some form, we are a great development and project community. But on the other hand, I think we have some serious problems to communicate and talk about personal doubts, worries, and also, this was part of even the DrupalCon London, individual burnout of contributors. We're just taking on too much, and then everyone has expectations for those people. This is a kind of tough topic, and I'm really not sure how we can improve or resolve it in any way. There have been some thoughts by opening IRC channels to actually let people throw out their frustrations and or whatever their personal moods and stuff like that. But in the end, it's a tough topic. We usually only meet on DrupalCons, and it's always good to meet people in person and talk about things. But even there, it's mostly technical oriented. So we have some issues to resolve there.
I mean, in a lot of ways, the kinds of problems that we're seeing around this, you know, the feeling that a lot of sort of low-level concerns or frustrations on the part of core developers and even some people in the broader development community sort of stayed silent until they sort of reached a boiling point. I think it's really a testament to how invested a lot of people are in Drupal and how the developers who work on it and who really consider themselves like people who make Drupal and build Drupal, it's a lot like, you know, a family of people who work on something. I mean, there's a lot of close connection and, you know, they work together and they have this shared project that they all work on and collaborate on. And just like families can, the desire to sort of smooth over a lot of the bumpy parts because you actually care about this thing that you're building and you care about the other people that you're building it with, that can be really strong. And, you know, in a lot of ways that can be useful, you know, not just randomly, you know, yelling, this sucks, you know, when you're frustrated. You know, that can be good because you don't want to just frustrate everyone else by venting. But at the same time, that tendency to stay positive and keep focusing on, you know, okay, well, what can we do today to make things better? In a lot of ways, that can sometimes prevent a community like that from stepping back and honestly assessing places where things aren't going well or where they need to improve. It can be tricky to make that step. And if our community doesn't have a lot of practice doing those kinds of things, these sort of first steps towards
voicing major concerns and figuring out how to resolve them, it can be scary. So again, I think it's one of those situations where this isn't cataclysmic. It's the kind of things that lots of projects face. I mean, in lots of software development circles, the concept of doing a post-mortem after major projects is really, really important. You know, that there's got to be a time where after you're over this major hurdle of getting something out the door, everybody gathers around and there's a, you know, no blame, 100%. Let's just talk through what went well, what didn't go well, and figure out how we can improve the next round. That post-mortem process is really important. You know, if we're taking years between major releases, sometimes having a single post-mortem conversation is probably not going to be sufficient to capture either, you know, what went well or what didn't go well. But I think figuring out how to integrate that process and make it an expected and constructive part of our community dialogue, rather than treating it as like, you know, oh my gosh, somebody's attacking me, or oh my gosh, somebody didn't like this patch that I submitted. So, you know, it's a learning process, both in how to do it constructively and how to respond to it constructively.
The other thing that Sun had brought up was the whole burnout, and Randy Fay had a whole series of blog posts and a discussion at a core conversation at DrupalCon talking about this. And the three main qualities that he pointed out was exhaustion, and, you know, if you are dealing with too much stress over too long of a time, you just get fatigued and physically and emotionally exhausted. That's one sort of component. And then the other two components that he said is if you get really cynical, like, oh no, like whatever I do is not going to be worth changing, or this is never going to change in Drupal, or just sort of taking a really pessimistic attitude about the future. And the third is you just feeling really ineffective, like if you're just not able to make headway on stuff that previously you may thought you had a lot of effectiveness and your efforts and your energy, but now you just kind of feel ineffective. So being exhausted, cynical, and ineffective, I guess, all combined to this burnout, and sometimes people need to kind of just step away. And what I kind of see what had happened with these series of blog posts was that there was a lot of emotional grievance about how the Drupal 7 process went, and there wasn't a real full speaking of that truth or a retrospective, like Jeff was saying. There was no real postmortem of like what really happened. It sounds like Dries did a survey and people answered it, but there was no real voicing of that. And this felt like a voicing of something that had been building up for a while and had kind of come to a head with what was going on with the Drupal 8 and the various things that had been caught up in the Drupal 8 cycle. So,
yeah, I already felt that we accumulated a lot of baggage during Drupal 7. And I think we realized kind of beyond the point where we were able to deal with it during Drupal 7. So I was kind of itching for post-mortem kind of February, March. But it didn't really happen. It happened a bit. But I think those kind of discussions are really happening now, which during like a normal cycle would be like quite a lot would have happened in Drupal 8 by now. And really it's just starting to get started the past couple of weeks, which is partly due to the backlog of actual bugs in Drupal 7 that we've been squashing for 6-7 months. And the kind of community in general has a difficulty in attacking like very high level subjects, because we're very focused on like activity. It's very easy to attack it from like a how much work you can do thing, which is not a bad thing, because I've been in other kind of organizations like this where it can be like weeks of planning and then nothing happens and then stuff like that. And Drupal doesn't really do that. If you want to do something, you can just start, and if people like it, it'll probably happen. So it's pretty good. But I think we've accumulated a lot of people and a lot of websites and a lot of code, and it's getting harder to deal with that. I think another thing in terms of burnout that's happened with Core, but also Drupal.org as well, is in terms of scaling, what we tend to do is add additional single points of failure. So say 2005, trees would be a single point of failure for something, and then that gets unsustainable. So then someone takes over like documentation team, and Arian was one of the people who posted about burnout, but there's pretty much like one person for half the documentation and one person for the other half. If you look at maintainers.txt in Core, there's usually one or two people listed per component. So 1,000 people contribute some kind of patch to core, and that's only the people who get mentioned in commit messages. A lot more people post bug reports, do testing, stuff like that. But if you look at like one component, say taxonomy module, there's two people listed, and I'm one of those people, and I'm listed in like three other places. So really, like, it's like one and a third people. And the number of people, the kind of long tail of contributors, is going pretty fast. In terms of code contributions, it's slowed slightly in Drupal 7. It still grew, but not as quick as Drupal 6 to 5. If you look at the very long tail in terms of number of bug reports, well, not just bug reports, but there are 17 issues posted every single day against Drupal 8 since January. 17 issues. And there are something like 100 people who got more than 20 patches committed to the whole of Drupal 7. So if you divide the issues by people, you start running out of people really quickly, like very, very fast. So it's really a lot of, when we talk about getting new contributors involved, it's quite difficult. Well, it's very easy to post a patch, and that patch may or may not get committed. But when they do, it's usually due to like a short tail of like 50, 100 people who would pick up the patch and review it for something and maybe write a test or knock it back because the code style was a bit dodgy or something like that, and kind of work your way getting through. And that's the kind of new people who need to get involved, is this kind of, the kind of mentoring roles and kind of regular contributors, which basically means like people addicted to Drupal. So there's people in relatively short supply. And you can get hooked to spend their weekends.
And I think that's actually a really interesting point, because if we don't work on how to make life easier or to grow that sort of middle zone of people who are tending patches and helping them through the whole process and doing the code reviews and scouting around to figure out what the impact on other different subsystems would be, and you know, those code gardeners, I think as Sun has referred to them, if that level doesn't grow, but what we get is 500 new people who are just submitting patches, then it actually worsens the situation, because that middle level that's sort of trying to figure out, does this work? Does it fit in well? Does it break something else somewhere else? That level just gets overloaded even more.
Yeah, it's really about kind of balance in where things are. And it's reflected in kind of the organizational structure of the core code base, and it's reflected into the contributor structure. Like, you have some people that are kind of vertically attached to all these different places in core, and then you have people who are kind of on the edges, and core itself is like that. So it's the one thing we started recently was core office hours, where people make sure they're around on IRC for like a couple of hours twice a week, and people can show up and they'll like walk you through submitting a patch. If you want to try to fix a bug, we'll find a bug to work from. So it kind of eases that transition of figuring out what to happen. So there are things that we can do to improve the situation, but it's like quite a lot of work. And it's also a retention issue. Like when Drupal 7 started, I was not doing Drupal full time. In fact, I don't think I was even working part time. I was just doing coding as a hobby, and I had a completely different day job. And then 2009-ish, I started doing Drupal full time in 2008. And I think that's something that's happening as well. Like people, if you're working in core, what tends to happen is you get really, really busy really, really fast. Because as soon as people get to know you, it's like, hey, here are these five freelance jobs that I can't do anymore. Or now, like, full-time jobs just kind of show up for people. So the kind of stakes have got a lot higher in the past 5 years in terms of what core contributors are doing with their time, whereas people used to maybe half-time, do some sites, things like that. Maybe they use Drupal and they use something else. Like, this is now people's like full-time job, and then they're doing core on top of that for maybe 15, 20 hours a week for many contributors, if not more.
Yeah, that was exactly the same cycle that I ended up going through a little earlier, and it gets daunting when you suddenly realize that your spare time project and your full-time work and all of that just converge into a massive Drupal code.
Yeah, and I think that's what Randy Fay was just trying to bring out with the burnout was, you know, if you got to take care of yourself physically and emotionally and have other social connections that are not through the computer, can help keep your battery charged. And yeah, it seems like this issue of burnout after the Drupal 7 cycle was big enough for it to have a whole session. And, you know, I'd encourage people to go read the posts and listen to the discussion because, yeah, I think it just will help people come up with those boundaries that will work for them. Catch, you wrote a post kind of saying the why all the drama and going into some of the almost a retrospective of what happened during the Drupal 7 release cycle. And, you know, there was a picture that you had from Dries of kind of the intention for what the timeline would be, ending with, you know, bug fixes starting in like November 15th, 2009, which, you know, got pushed back by a couple of years. So why don't you just sort of talk about what your take is on what kind of happened back on the Drupal 7 release cycle?
So Dries has this graphic where, like, we'd start kind of straight bug fixing in November 2009, which is roughly when we did start like straight bug fixing. But I think when that graphic was posted, which was several months before, people thought that was still pretty realistic, and maybe, you know, by February, March, like early 2010, the release would come out. And it was January 2011 when we actually got 7.0 out. And what happened is, from my point of view, we started the Drupal 7 development cycle and we introduced simple test, which has been great for core stability. But we kind of spent a lot of time running simple test so we could have a longer release cycle, which was fine. There's a few things you can't test. You can't test the UI in terms of JavaScript, CSS, theming, issues like that. And for a very, very, very long time, you couldn't test the upgrade path because the upgrades in Drupal core run in a slightly different environment to the rest of core. Eventually, we managed to work around that, but that took a very long time. So with the kind of testing harness that we built up over the first few months, we just opened a ton of issues and we just tried to increase the test coverage because Dries had said, if you add a load of tests, you can add a lot more features and you get a much longer time to work on everything else. So we did that, but we had these gaps in the upgrade path and in certain other places. And as we kept adding stuff on top and on top and on top, those gaps kind of got deeper because there was more updates being added and people had got out of the habit of manually testing things in Drupal 6. You would have seen me or Andy Byman clicking through to test each patch. Now we can just sling it up in issue queue. The bot runs it. If it comes back green, then you didn't make anything worse than it already was, as long as it's tested. And basically, we just, you know, we had to stuff months and months and months of work, which passed all our tests, but we had some kind of deep underlying hard-to-fix issues that were building up. And once we got into the kind of January, February 2010, we got to the point where we were just looking at those and we had like 300 issues racked up that we needed to work down to zero. And that took a very long time. Because if you go 300 to zero, you're not really fixing 300 issues. Every month you could be adding 50. So to get from 300 down to zero, maybe you need to fix 600 bugs.
Wow, yeah.
I think this is actually a really useful point that Catch brings up. The Drupal 7 cycle, just thousands and thousands of automated tests were added to Drupal, and that gave us a big, big benefit because of just that automated check that could be run when somebody submitted a new patch. But that also only tests for the things that we think to test for. Unless someone explicitly goes out and writes a test to run some code, check what the results are, and decide whether or not it's correct, it doesn't get tested. I mean, I guess that's sort of obvious when you think about it, but it's easy to miss when you just think about, oh, we have tons of test coverage. Those tests don't check whether a new conceptual addition to Drupal has conceptual ripple effects around in other systems that other people haven't anticipated. It only checks for what we know to check for. And that's something that has to be kept in mind. And I don't want to assume that that's what you were specifically getting at, Catch, but I think that's one aspect of it too. As we started adding more and more subsystems to Drupal and adding more complex code, we were adding tests, but not all of them were actually checking for deep conceptual problems. They were just checking for, does X work? Does Y work? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, definitely at the beginning, a lot of people in the core team, myself included, were very new to writing tests. And very early on, I think Charlie Golden worked on code coverage so you could actually see the lines of code that were tested. So the idea was that the more tests we have and the more coverage we have, the less regressions we have. And that's fine, but then things like disabling a module and then uninstalling and then reinstalling a module. People don't automatically write tests for things like that, so we left a lot of gaps, and we added a lot of things to Drupal 7, which actually made stuff like that quite hard to deal with. Like when you disable a module in Drupal, the kind of system forgets about it, but then it's got to figure it out when you re-enable it, what it's going to do. And those kind of issues have kind of built up over time, and they were just kind of gaps.
It sounds like what you're saying is there's dependencies between different modules that, you know, have to be turned on, and, you know, to iterate through all those tests by turning on and off modules make the length of how long it would take to run the test even longer, it sounds like. So,
right, I mean, if you take the upgrade path from Drupal 6 to Drupal 7, just with core, say there's 25, 30 core modules in Drupal 6, those updates can all run at different times, depending on which combination of modules that you have installed. So even when an upgrades test passed for a long time after we'd fixed a lot of bugs, once Drupal 7 was released, someone upgraded a site that had something enabled and something else disabled, and the order of the updates ran in a different order, and all those dependencies started falling apart. And you'd need, you know, I don't know how many databases, like, to get all those combinations, you would need a lot of databases, and you could spend, like, 3 hours running a test. Right now it takes about 40 minutes. And it's these kind of interdependencies of things that I think have been tripping us up now. So it's, like, it was great that we added the tests, and if you're building, especially new sites on Drupal 7, I was working on Drupal 7 site about 9 months before it released, and we did not hit that many issues. But in terms of core maintenance, there's been a trade-off because we were able to do so much, and the little bits that got left behind have caught up with us over the past 18 months.
Right, yeah, and just this topic kind of brings up this other big topic that has been kind of thrown around, which is the, you know, is Drupal a product or is it a framework? And if it was a framework, it sounds like there wouldn't be as many kind of interdependencies between the modules. It would be more self-contained. And because there are these dependencies, it's, you know, becoming, and I guess one of the things that you said, Catch, was that it's kind of like a half of a product and half of a framework. And with on its own, Drupal isn't, you know, a great product on its own. It's not a great framework on its own, but just sort of combined is its strength to be able to kind of be flexible enough to do both. But yeah, that sort of tension is has been kind of bubbling up in terms of like this crossroads that Jeff Eaton talked about in his talk at DrupalCon on whether or not it's a product, framework, or a platform. And a crossroads in the sense that the more that we focus it on being a product, the more that it could hurt it as being a framework, and the more that we focus on it being a framework, it could hurt it being a product. So what is sort of happening right now with that debate?
Boy, that's a thorny question. It sounds almost like it's a no-win scenario. I don't think we're in that dire of a situation in Drupal in the very big picture, in the sense that this is a phase that every single successful, large, growing software project hits at some point. This is not a problem that is unique to us by any means. It's just weird now experiencing it as a community of developers, you know, as an open source community. And it's maybe new to us, but it's not new to software or to software projects. I mean, I ended up doing a session at DrupalCon London about this product framework split. And the reason that the word platform got tossed in there is because I think that purely talking about it as a product for end users or a framework for developers is an artificial split that's a little too binary. It's not either or. And for better or worse, Drupal has always been a sort of hybrid product that sits in the middle. Catch's post on the subject where he talked about there actually being like five separate layers inside of Drupal, ranging from basic web application stuff to handle things like HTTP requests and file handling, all the way up to the very top level of polished product functionality that we think of when you download Open Atrium or Drupal Commons or something like that. Those different layers are very different, and it's not like one is for devs and one is for users or something like that. There's just a gradation of like building blocks and tools that get used along the way. And understanding how they fit together is useful for us, but I think the big issue, and this comes back to what Sun's original post on this was about the crisis, is how do we figure out how to break down these maintenance problems that we're having and the compromises that we make in terms of, you know, adding things to Drupal that help different kinds of users and make Drupal better to use for different kinds of users. How do we balance those things and come up with a set of guidelines for ourselves to how we're going to control the sort of rampant growth of functionality that goes into Drupal core and code that goes into it? Because I think you guys can probably talk a little more about it, but you've been running some really interesting numbers on the amount of core contribution and the amount of growth that's been going on in core versus how many people have been working on it over the past number of years. And while we still get growth in the number of contributors to core, it's being outpaced by how much stuff we put into Drupal core. It's like the clown car full of code thing. And if we don't try to figure out ways of managing that more than just like chop out a module and now it's better or something, it'll just keep growing and keep hurting us.
It seems like Sun had, in his post, he, you know, and I guess Sun in general and has done an amazing amount of work on Drupal 7 and a number of patches, and you have in your byline man of action. So what I find really interesting is that after you did this post, you kind of then go on to Drupal.org and create all these other issues and kind of a fire starter in some way of just getting all this discussion. And one of the issues that you created was make core maintainable as a kind of a meta issue, but it started this discussion of the, you know, small core or what should we take out if we are going to make it more maintainable. Then people kind of conclude, oh, in order to do that, we need to take stuff that's crufty out, that's not really fully baked, and we'll kind of leave it to contrib. And that, I guess, became a slippery slope in terms of, you know, what do you take out and what do you keep? And maybe you guys could sort of talk about, like, what sort of came out of that issue with over 230 comments the last time I checked.
Well, yeah. Well, to continue on Eitan's considerations, he mentioned the tension between the framework and the product. And my post was actually about, we have this handful of people who are actually reviewing and helping to maintain core, but they also have to review and maintain parts of core that only apply to a very low volume of users. And yeah, they need to maintain the things that almost no one uses or things that are outdated and happen to be just in core to serve as kind of a regression testing. So basically, if we change some larger parts in core, for example, a nice example is always the poll module, which almost, well, no one uses. Yeah, the only real consumer of the new Ajax framework we have in Drupal 7. So basically, whenever we touch the Ajax framework in Drupal 7 and try to make it work with forms and replace stuff and whatever, we had poll module breaking. And so this is basically one part of the discussion that arose. So we identified that we have some feature modules in core that actually have a purpose to some extent. For example, yeah, this poll module is actually both a good and a bad example, because it's good because we have this one single API consumer of the Ajax framework. But on the other hand, poll module did not really change since it was introduced. So this thing is in core and no one cares for it. And it's still the same architecture since it was introduced. I'm not sure when it was introduced, but it was releases ago. And basically, there were no new features. Well, it didn't evolve like the rest of core. And then we have other modules, which we also have to care for, which we need to write patches for, review, maintain, and also commit patches that are purely product features. So for example, a recent example would be stuff like the toolbar, overlay, and dashboard modules, which were added for Drupal 7. But we also have older modules of that kind. For example, the forum module and also the blog module, which was already removed now, but that removal was debatable on its own. So basically, the discussion was kickstarted with the idea of just blatantly removing everything. That was sort of a high level of frustration of having to maintain too much. And the discussion went on, and we made some really nice progress there. It was a very constructive discussion. I really recommended everyone to read it. And there were people like Larry Garfield, Krell on Drupal.org, and Catch and Eaton too, who moved on and said, okay, what are our actual metrics for having a module or a functionality in core? Because we currently don't have any. We are just adding all kind of stuff, but we are also maintaining this stuff. And we don't really know what actually belongs into core and what does not. So we have no criteria for that. And that's basically where this discussion ended in some way. We didn't reach a conclusion on that yet. And yeah, that's the current state.
I think some good progress has been made towards that. And I think one of the reasons that there's still a lot of back and forth discussion is that certain things like, I mean, I understand what's being communicated, but like statements like nobody uses poll module, I think can be tricky because there are a lot of sites out there that do use it. It's just that a lot of the high-profile sites that we tend to think of as really taking advantage of the capabilities of Drupal are doing other things with Drupal than like turning on polls. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of these discussions are so difficult and thorny, because not many people using poll module could still mean that there's 100,000 sites out there that are using it. The scope of Drupal's success over the past couple of years has sort of put us in a position where even little used portions of core can still affect very large swaths of people and very large numbers of sites. So even if we end up deciding it doesn't make sense for Drupal core itself, you know, the main project that everyone maintains and, you know, everything has to work smoothly before we can go on with other code and stuff like that, even if we end up deciding that things have to be shifted out of that project that's being worked on and maybe put into the contrib repository as a third-party module or something like that, we still have to grapple with questions of how to make that transition a smooth one, both for the developers who have to maintain it and for the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of websites that are actually using it and the people who build stuff with it. And I think that's where the sort of five-layer separation of Drupal that was talked about in that blog post that was mentioned earlier is helpful, because as you move up those layers from like basic web framework APIs to feature modules like forum and blog and poll and stuff like that, up to like install profiles that package up a particular kind of website and just let you turn the key and start rolling with it, I think the higher up we go in that stack, the safer and easier it is to move things out of Drupal core itself and into the contributed modules repository where people can go and find stuff and add it on to core of Drupal. But it also means that we have to be very aware of what the impact is on people who are evaluating Drupal for the first time. Like if we hand it to them and the official Drupal that you get when you download it from Drupal.org is nothing but a big bag full of building blocks, and there are no obvious things you can simply turn on and see, oh, this is a forum, this is a blog, etc., it makes Drupal considerably more difficult to even understand. It's like there's a cartoon that's been circulating for, I think, a couple of years that says that it's the Drupal learning curve compared to the WordPress and Joomla learning curves. And it's a normal graph where you see the little lines going up, but then the line for Drupal actually forms a little cliff going straight up, and then you see people sort of desperately trying to climb it and falling off and stuff like that, which is sort of sad slash funny slash sad. But I think it captures that idea that as we've moved towards a more flexible building block style of approach, it also means that there's a lot more initial knowledge that people have to build up for how to assemble all those things together before they can actually have even a simple usable website that they can tinker around with. And I think that's where a lot of the tension has been, figuring out what good rules of thumb are when new functionality is proposed or someone says, oh, this needs to be taken out. What are good rules of thumb to determine the impact across a number of different groups? And I think that's something that we've been having a lot of discussions about. And I think it's a really healthy thing for the community. I know that, you know, the Drupal world has a strong tendency to emphasize getting code written and getting it written fast. And, you know, talk is silver, code is gold. And I think just one of the things that we're seeing as a part of this discussion is that we have historically tended to undervalue the planning process and the thinking process that goes on before you just write lots of code. You know, we've done that at times, but we have a tendency to view it as a necessary evil rather than an important and a valuable step. And it's really encouraging to see these kinds of discussions actually happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, it really reminds me of like this core existential question of what is Drupal, you know, like, and what that means in terms of Dries and, you know, the core maintainers is how are they going to decide what goes in and what stays out? And the tricky thing like that Eaton brought up in his presentation is that there are at least four or five totally different kind of audiences that are using Drupal. And at the most simple, if you can kind of break it up into two, is sort of the new people who are just want something that is going to serve them as a specific thing that they want to use as a product. And that's, I guess I see that as sort of like the Drupal Gardens product is trying to put people and give a good first impression for people, evaluate it, and the first 4 hours they're going to be able to do something real on the web with it. And that's sort of like that product. I mean, there's many other products you can do with Drupal, but at the highest end, I guess, is the expert, where they're using it as a framework to build a very specific website that they want to make. And I guess what this heuristic that came up in this make core maintainable is instead of just randomly pulling out modules, there needs to be a clear idea of what it is. And Dries actually weighed in. I think this is interesting what he said, is because, you know, they were asking Dries to come up with a specific heuristic, and he says some things can't be expressed in rules. That said, my goal, or his heuristic, is for core to give both newbies primarily and experts secondarily a good initial experience with Drupal. Thus, we add what they want or expect and remove some of the clutter, i.e. the blog module and unexpected features like the aggregator module. And it's one of the reasons why he did the state of the Drupal survey. To me, that seems kind of like an inadequate clarity for what Drupal is, or at least he's, in his mind, he's preferencing the product angle of it rather than what the framework builders want to build. So I don't know if you guys had any thoughts about that or what's happened since then.
I'm sure there are many thoughts.
Yeah, I think that there is a tension between that. I was also kind of surprised by that statement. But in the end, there are two factors here. Let's go back to the example of pull module. I think no one would actually have a problem of maintaining something like pull module in core if it would be generic and if you could build all kind of polls and surveys and whatever with it, because that would be actually core material. But yeah, pull module is not that kind of module. It's just a plain product feature. And it might give a good initial experience, but not really sure about that. And people are able to just enable it and have some basic polls. So yeah, basically that's the discussion that we kind of ended up on now. That we basically know we have a couple of features in core, which are purely product features that are only used by a certain audience of Drupal core. Perhaps, but not necessarily, this audience is the audience that downloads Drupal for the first time and plays around with it in the first 3 or 6 months. After that, you pretty quickly realize that you can't build anything useful out of Drupal core itself. So you realize that there are 8,000 or more contributed modules, which allow you to build much more sophisticated sites for your particular use case. And that's also where Eaton's presentation or session from DrupalCon London comes in, that you have a use case, and I have a use case, everyone has a use case, and Drupal Core somehow tries to serve all use cases. And in doing that, we horribly fail at all use cases. So we can't please everyone. And we basically ended up in a discussion that we have product features in core that serve a certain use case. For example, the initial experience with Drupal when you download it. But those features are not really useful for intermediate Drupal users or experts. And it's also debatable, highly debatable, whether the expert Drupal developers, the high-profile Drupal developers, actually have to care for them in Drupal core and have to maintain them in Drupal core.
So I think this brings up something else about maintainability. What's happened in terms of Drupal modules as a whole, like when I first started using Drupal, like 4.5, 4.6, the only kind of really flexible, make your own things I can think of was like Node taxonomy and FlexiNode. So those you could kind of put things together, and that was why I chose Drupal in the first place. You could put stuff together and you could make something, and you weren't tied to what had been decided for you, like how your site was going to run. You just kind of figure it out. And it usually involved a lot of hacks, but, you know, it would do it. And as time went on, more and more modules in contrib went down that line. So you had CCK come and views, which came in 4.7. And then by 5 and 6, most modules were extending those rather than building directly off Form API or directly off the other features. However, core did not have those low-level building block modules included. CCK was added as the field API in Drupal 7. Views wasn't in either. So all of the modules like blog, form, poll that we're talking about that kind of everyone loves to hate, a big reason why we don't like them is because they actually aren't built the way that Drupal modules are built now. If you were to post a contrib module that built all of its own node forms from scratch and had its own integration, then you probably get an issue saying, why isn't it a CCK field? And while quite a lot of things in Drupal 7 were converted to the field API, there were things that got left over that we just did not have the time to get to by code freeze. And I think that's one of the underlying things that's happening is it's not just the actual features that the things provide, which doesn't really matter that much. Like you can have reference implementation or something. It's the way that those things are built has been outdated, and it's partly because core has not provided the things that are actually standard for building those kind of features now. And also we have kind of productive features quite baked in some areas as well, like in system module and places like that. So that's the other thing. I think a lot of people have approached the discussion of removing things as removing features, but it's also that there's this kind of tension of to really have those things maintainable in core, we'd have to move things in. Or we would have to put a lot of work in to bring them up to date with what has been brought in over the past couple of years. And kind of every release, we've kind of added, say, a new API like the field API, and we kind of raced to get things done. And we just kind of didn't quite get far enough, like these kind of outer reaches of core, which are like the last bits that get looked at. Every release, we don't just quite get there. So it's like form, limps long, a little bit longer, profile module, limps long, got hidden. And that's the real issue. I think if we can deal with those like refactoring issues, maintenance burden would go down, but that requires a lot of people to do all the work for the refactoring. So it's a very, very tricky thing. And there's no guarantee that it will happen in contrib either.
And I think one of the things that is really important about that point that you just made, Catch, is at least in my opinion, and I think this sort of was touched on by some of the stuff that Sun said as well, that's one of the ways forward that I think is really coming to the forefront now. It's that rather than building a lot of product style features into Drupal core just so that people can have a smoother initial experience or that more kinds of sites can be built just using Drupal core without downloading extra modules, rather than trying to load on lots of very focused special purpose end user feature modules, instead focus more heavily on the building block pieces that come with core, so that core comes with enough of the different Lego bricks that you could actually build a simple car or a simple house or something like that. And then
use install profiles to pre-build a simple website out of those building blocks to say, oh, you could have a group blog, or you could have a brochureware website for your small business or something like that, to treat the purpose of install profiles that come with Core as demonstrating how these building blocks can be assembled and giving people something to sort of take a look at and use, but to step away from having dedicated modules whose only purpose is to have a bunch of custom code that implements polls or something like that. Basically, to emphasize the building block components as what we really pay attention to in Core, and then use profiles to actually assemble simple things out of them to show people what they can do. And I think, at least in my opinion, that approach ends up being a lot more sustainable than trying to maintain two separate kinds of things in Core, both building block pieces and these standalone feature modules that don't actually really get used by the same developers who are having to maintain them.
Yeah, and one point that was brought up earlier that I want to kind of highlight and kind of ask about is Sun had said that some of the modules that went in that Core maintainers are not necessarily interested in helping maintain, or a lot of ones that he mentioned were related to the D7 UX, the dashboard, the toolbar, the overlay, you know, these sort of, you know, Drupal up to Drupal 6 is always focused on the user-facing stuff. In other words, what you can see that's not behind the admin screen. And the admin experience had been kind of ignored for the longest time. And so this was the first big effort to really improve the user experience for the users, for the admins and the content creators who are using Drupal. And so why is it that the Drupal Core developers aren't necessarily interested in helping maintain it?
So I think I answered that. I was one of the first discussions about the D7 UX thing, and that kind of got started in about April 2009, about 4 or 5 months before Code Freeze, which did not leave a lot of time between the design phase, which is like 3 or 4 months, and the actual implementation of those features. So what kind of happened was there was a design process that went through, and I think implementation must have started in like August, like a month before Code Freeze was really supposed to start. And most of the rest continued as kind of exceptions to the release cycle. Like, here's the 10 things, and it wasn't just D7 UX. I think RDF was one of them, one or two other things. And it was like, let's get these done and then freeze at the end of that, but no other features apart from these can go in. So for those things, the kind of process of getting that done was not able to look deeply at the problem, that the issues that need to be solved. From a UX point of view, there had been, a decent amount of time to the issues, but something like the dashboard module was built on the block system, and the block system in Drupal Core has not really changed since 4.5, 4.6. And there are numerous efforts in contrib, like big modules like panels, context, display suite, which attempt to kind of work around its deficiencies. And during Drupal 7, we had not really spent any time refactoring the block system. It's still roughly the same as it was 5 years ago. But to build a dashboard, you need to have blocks in it. It makes sense to build it on an API. And the API was not up to the task. So a lot of kind of workarounds had to go in quite late, when you couldn't go back and say, right, well, to do this how we would like to, we need to go back and revisit the block system and make it a system that you can easily build this on. And that just, there was not time for that. So for me, D7 UX was really, it was not the fact that it's user interface stuff, although it's easier to ignore user interface things that you can switch off compared to something that's deep down. It was really about scheduling. It kind of started beyond the point where we were able to make kind of underlying changes to support the stuff that went in, which means that the dashboard can't be used by panels. Elements in the dashboard cannot be used. It's a thing that sits by itself, that's built on stuff that a lot of people just have tried to stop using. So for me, that was a big issue with it. And I don't think that's limited to D7 UX. I think that's true of other things in Drupal Core that have gone in towards the end of cycles, and there hasn't been time to either convert Core to take advantage of them or to fix kind of lower-level API things that would make them cleaner implementations. And I think that's one of the things that's been focused over the past 6 months, is going back and looking at a lot of this and trying to really attack things that have been left for a long time. And it's not just the feature modules, it's things like the bootstrap and like the module system and stuff, which just, you know, there people worked on those during Drupal 7, but they didn't really get an overhaul. Like, we worked on a lot of things, but they've fallen behind. So, yeah, so for me, that was the issue. There were certain things that I didn't like that came out of DecentUX, but really scheduling is hard. Like, this kind of the thorn and the freeze and trying to get things in place.
So I'd like to add to that one very essential thing. In my mind, I'd like to throw out some huge props to Bojan and Juroj, who led the usability effort in Drupal 7. And in my mind, the actual improvements, the really large improvements that are not really honored in this discussion, are the many, many, many clarifications and changes to forms and user interface design that came out of that effort. And those actual D7 UX modules, which we are talking about, meaning toolbar, dashboard, overlay, and shortcut, those actually are just a minor, very, very minor part of that. I'm sure Ethan would say that at least toolbar serves for the first-timer user experience. But on the other hand, there are other solutions, perhaps better, perhaps worse, solutions for the very same problem spaces in Contrib already. So for me as a core contributor, it's kind of pointless to maintain those in core because there are other solution attempts for them in Contrib. So,
well, specifically the admin module that you help maintain.
Yes, no command.
I think that's one of the big issues that has to be dealt with. I think Sun's point about that is really, really important, that like in a lot of the projects that I've worked on at Lullabot, projects where user experience and especially the administrative experience for like the editors who work on a site, on projects where that's been emphasized, there's always work that goes on and, you know, building some kinds of custom code and, you know, building out special screens and features and stuff like that for the administrative experience. But a huge amount of the work that goes into so much of that is about going in there and just doing the hard, ugly slog through the mud work of updating field labels, updating descriptions, making sure that things are grouped correctly visually on the screen, and just smoothing out all of those rough edges that can just make it really frustrating for somebody who's trying to get their bearings first. I'm torn on some of the modules that went in with the D7 UX project. Things like the toolbar in particular, I think they do bring something very valuable to Drupal in terms of a unified sort of visual mechanism for allowing people to jump to various administrative screens and stuff like that. And it also does it in a way that's a lot simpler and more streamlined, visually speaking, than a lot of the existing solutions that are out there in Contrib. I think the biggest danger, as always, is figuring out how to avoid essentially competing with third-party contributed modules out there that are already in that space. And this is something that it's, you know, that tension between should something be in core or should it not is always a really serious issue, because competing with existing third-party modules that are out there trying to solve a particular problem isn't just an issue of like frustrating people who've been working on these problems already. It's also a matter of duplicating work in a lot of situations. This is actually how I ended up first getting involved in a lot of these discussions like 3-4 years ago about whether or not things should be in core or whether or not they should be in Contrib, because I was building installation profiles for sites that needed to customize a lot of this stuff. And the more stuff that gets baked into core, unless it's very, very carefully done, the harder it is to say, no, for the site that we're building, we need a different kind of way of presenting this stuff. And I think that's another part of the tension. You know, a huge amount of the work that went into D7 UX was that slog through the mud, make hard decisions about where fields should go and what fields should be on what form and stuff like that. And then most of the controversy revolved around a couple of very highly visible pieces of user interface Chrome, like, you know, vertical tabs and the toolbar and stuff like that. It was a really big and sweeping project, and there were lots of questions raised by it. And I think one of the reasons it became such a focal point for a lot of these discussions is it was one of those first really big, wide-ranging initiatives that was there in Drupal core that touched tons and tons of different areas and put a lot of code onto the plates of the core maintainers. And I think it started bubbling up a lot of these questions about how we want to make these decisions.
One thing to also kind of highlight through the course of this discussion was this idea of having more code gardeners or needing to go in and refactor all these subsystems that we're building things on top of that are really not kind of been updated over time. And so to me, whenever the new Drupal release cycle of Drupal 8 gets opened up, a lot of the focus and the effort is on the new features, or people are really driven to work on things that are wide sweeping changes to either the infrastructure of core, or, you know, whatever's new and exciting for them is what's going to be people are working on. And a lot of those are like the official initiatives that have been kind of crowned by Dries to get these features in, kind of getting official write off of saying, if you work on this, then it's a good chance that it's going to get in. But then if you're not working on an official initiative, then I guess that's where Sun, you've started the unofficial framework initiative. Either there's cleanup or there's other code refactoring, or, you know, maybe you could sort of talk about like your effort that you're putting in this unofficial framework initiative that you've taken on.
Well, it's actually with Catch. We've coined that together. Catch is actually the better person to talk about it.
Okay, I'll better say something then. Started with a different title, which was It's Time for System Module to Commit Seppuku. Because about a year ago, we had a lot of different... I feel like we still have some of those problems where you would clear one cache and something else would go wrong, and then something else would go wrong, and then you'd try and touch installer and something would break. And pretty much all of those roads all lead back to System Module somewhere. Because...
System Module.
Oh, yeah. Like, really, you can't have a database table. There's a lot of things you can't do unless you're a module. So all the things that aren't modules that need to have database tables and things, they all live in System Module. And this means that over time, it has accumulated a vast range of responsibilities that makes it a very, very, very important part of Drupal core. So it does everything from install the module system itself to provide the kind of little admin blocks, like for structure and things like that, content administration and the user interface. It's responsible for all of these things, like right from the lowest level up to the highest level that you see in core. And the framework initiative started with trying to untangle that. Can we kind of slice bits off of this and move them out and keep doing that until we actually can see what we can't fix and then attack that? And it's moved on a bit since then. And it's really very intertwined with what the web services and context and core initiative is doing and the configuration management initiative. Because configuration management is about having a kind of common API for configuration, whereas now you have the variable system, and then you have a whole bunch of modules that make their own database tables to put things in out of. It's really about looking at everything that we've got and trying to compartmentalize it. And things like being able to write unit tests, like core has 33,000 test assertions. And those are from, say, 200-300 test cases, but only about 3 of them are unit tests, because nearly everything is dependent on the database or is dependent on the global somewhere. So the idea is to kind of take off what we can, clean it up so that it's one little segment, make it unit testable, and then put it all back together at the end. And that's really what that's about.
When it's done, what are you going to be able to do with it, I guess? I'm trying to get an idea of what the end result is going to be once you kind of finish this, or, you know, get to where you want to be.
So right now, if you want to see what's responsible for, say, the module system or the hook system or stuff like that, and really trace the request, you'll bounce between, say, 7, 8, 9 different files that are all doing different bits and pieces. If you want to test something and you try to make it a unit test case, you'll immediately start hitting fatal errors because you called a like theme links or something, and under certain circumstances that'll query the database to see if there's a function for theming links. Or if you're trying to fix a bug in disabled modules, somewhere will break another test that's in a completely unrelated part of core. And that's really what's been adding to the maintenance workload, is that we have these very interdependent systems, and when you touch like one bit, all the balance goes somewhere else and things start falling over. So the hope is that all the dependencies are clear. You can actually build on top of like a kind of solid block of dependencies, and you don't have things kind of looping back around and underneath. So when you need to tackle a problem, you can fix the problem in the one thing and ignore the rest. And it would take a very long time to get there from where we are now, but there's quite a lot of momentum behind it, and there's people interested in working on it. So I think we've got a good chance to get a decent amount of that work done.
So basically, the high-level goal is to demangle what we currently have as base systems in core. So basically, what everything relies on, the entire Drupal system relies on certain subsystems, and those are not cleanly separated, and they are scattered over the entire Drupal code base, and they can't be tested on its own. That's basically the goal we want to resolve, because that bloat and those interdependencies between individual parts made the resolution of critical bugs in the past year really, really tough. So this really needs to happen. And part of that is that these are really low-level systems. And because they are so complex and hard to understand at this point, this can basically only be done by real hardcore experts of Drupal core developers. For example, in an area where I don't see any newcomers that come into Drupal core and start to contribute, I don't see anyone in those issues, because it's literally too complex. Even long-timers have troubles to understand what is actually going on. So that's actually the focus that Drupal core developers should have, because the entire system depends on these base subsystems, but instead we are caring for product features.
I think also one of the big benefits of the framework initiative is it actually groups a lot of these issues and brings them together, so that somebody who is interested in working on these kinds of tasks, or even just wants to know what kinds of tasks are there for this kind of an initiative, they can go to that and look at the issues and say, oh, I agree, I will try to help on that. Pulling those things together rather than it just being a sort of vague aspiration to make the system better, I think is a really big, big step.
And there's also, we will at the end get some like nice features out of it. Like the database layer in Drupal 7 is probably the most decoupled part of the system at the moment. Well, that and the lock and the queue framework, those three things that went into Drupal 7 are pretty well organized. And that has meant that the database layer is a Drupal 6 contrib module. The lock system was backported to Drupal 6 at like 6.16 or something, like quite a late release. And the queue system is backported to a module as well. So the more things that we can clean up and make into like small unified components, we'll be able to reuse them across releases. So your Drupal 7 modules should be able to use Drupal 8 low-level APIs if they want to, which means when they port, you won't need to change anything.
And for people who want to use Drupal as more of an expert end of using it as a framework to build something very specific, are they going to be able to turn off the node module and be able to, like, you know, is it going to make it easier to use Drupal as just a pure framework after this initiative is done?
So I personally would not want to use Drupal as a pure framework, because I think it would be a little bit silly. But hopefully by the time Drupal 8 is released, the node module will just be an implementation of entities and fields and will not actually be that much by itself. It used to have like everything that was kind of Drupal in it. And that's kind of being moved down a level and shared amongst nodes and comments and users and stuff like that. So Sun's actually got an issue in the queue to make node module optional. So I don't think we'll be ripping it out anytime in the very far future. But it would be possible to disable it. You might not want to.
Like if you just wanted to make a site that used blocks, taxonomy terms, and user accounts, and you wanted to lay out your site like that, at least the technical capability of doing that, if you wanted to, could be there. But it's not like the goal here is to make Drupal just this tiny little bundle of things that doesn't come with nodes and doesn't come with users or anything like that. It's not so much wanting to turn Drupal into something ridiculously tiny as decoupling more of these pieces that over time have really grown together, and it's become very impossible to either use them separately or maintain them as a whole without just pouring tons and tons and tons of work into it. And I think one of the things that comes up a lot in discussions about how to maintain Drupal and how to improve things, especially for the developers who are putting a lot of hours into it, one of the traditional answers to that is figure out how to get new people involved in working on Drupal core. And I think that's obviously really important, but I think making these different components of Drupal better isolated so that you could, say, learn how the queuing and locking system works and then, you know, help work on it, or you could learn how the database layer works and work on it. I think making those different pieces of Drupal less tangled up with each other also makes it easier for people who are interested in getting involved in Drupal core development to get on board and not necessarily have to spend a year like mentoring under one of the current heavy-duty core developers so that they can understand the whole system before really sinking their teeth in.
There's also another part to it. Making node module optional, if you remove the hardwired part of it, then, we can actually start to think, because a question that probably almost no one asked himself is node module actually a good implementation? Is this a good feature, or can it be done differently? No one asks this question.
Sacrilege!
Because it's hardwired, because it's a required part of Drupal core currently. But as soon as it is optional, people have the chance to replace it. So you can have a, perhaps, content module or whatever that just starts to think differently.
You know, we've been talking about the framework, and the other side of that is, you know, increasing the capabilities for Drupal to become a better product, or at least a product that's more focused. And, you know, just published a Drupal Voices podcast with Jeff Eaton on the Snowman project, which talks about this idea of, can we just use the core modules and create different flavors of Drupal? And there's some other issues that have come up with make Drupal more flexible for core installation profiles. But what's the other end of this, of if we are going to make it focus on making the framework better and making it better for products, then what's sort of going on in that realm?
One interesting fact about this on a very high macro level is that we currently have 4 or 5 initiatives, but all of them are very, very technical. We don't have a single product initiative. So this also clarifies to some extent how much we actually care for our product. So I think what we want to do is to have a platform or product initiative. I'd call it personally platform initiative, because that term really nails it what we are after with the Snowman installation profile, or this effort and all of the decoupling and changes we want to make. But the bigger picture is still somewhat missing. There's no container we can put all of these considerations in and basically start a discussion on what Drupal, the product, or the products should be or can be.
Big questions.
So I think, yeah, these are completely independent and decoupled evolution paths, and we can certainly enforce the other half, the platform and product part, and try to get more people involved with that and actually think about what Drupal, the product, is or should be.
Yeah, Jeff Eaton, you had talked about in your talk, you kind of made this, I think it's pretty clear what people realize what a product is. It's, you know, it's something that you use right away. It's something that, out of the box, it's kind of set up to serve a very specific use case. And a framework is something that you kind of are using this Lego building blocks in this toolkit to build something very specific. And Drupal is, you know, you've kind of termed it as the platypus problem, where it's kind of doing both kind of to different degrees of success, but it's sort of they're working together and they're tightly coupled. How are you sort of solving that false dichotomy with the platform, and how do you define what that platform is?
It, at least in the conversations that I've had about it, I guess the way I see the platform is it's the whole kit and caboodle. It's all of those things put together. When we talk about, say, downloading like Open Atrium or something like that, that's a very specific product. You're not just getting Drupal with some modules. You're getting Open Atrium. It's a set of very specific decisions about the kinds of things you're going to be doing, the way that it should be presented, how it happens, stuff like that. So that Open Atrium piece and all of those decisions and the experience that you have with it, that definitely lives at like the product level. The framework stuff, it's, you know, it's being built with nodes and form API and all the rest of the Drupal pieces. You know, it can use that framework like parts to accomplish its goals, but the whole, like all of those things together, is what I would consider the Drupal platform. Like Open Atrium, the conference organizing distribution that's being worked on for different Drupal camps and stuff like that, it's an install profile with a bunch of choices about how you would do a site to run a Drupal camp or a Drupal con. Drupal Commons, those are all examples of things that are part of the Drupal platform. So in that sense, I sort of consider the platform to be an umbrella that takes in the importance of both the framework style pieces, the site building application that people use, like the administrative screens that they use to go in and create new node types and add fields and stuff like that, and the actual finished product that people use to go blog or download videos or, you know, whatever they're doing with a particular site. That framework and the site building application and the finished product that visitors end up using, those things all fall under at least what I consider the platform umbrella. And that's why it can be tricky talking about these things sometimes, but I think a lot of our conversations about Drupal core and whether or not something should be in core or not in core, I think that's sort of a false dichotomy. And where Sun in particular, I think, has been talking a lot about the potential for packaging approaches. But like right now, if you create an install profile and put it on Drupal.org, it actually is downloadable as a full copy of Drupal that just happens to have that install profile and all of its related modules ready to use. That approach to like packaging up particular kinds of end products can really blur the distinction between this thing that I downloaded and Drupal core for a lot of people who come in and want to use Drupal for some particular end task. But it also has the potential for offloading a lot of the lesser used or very use case specific pieces into those kinds of downloadable products rather than keeping them in Drupal core. It's just, you know, the hard part is where to draw those lines.
Right. So that's probably a good part, a good place to kind of wrap it up. Do you guys have any other final thoughts that you wanted to throw in there?
Just quickly, when people are talking about Drupal 8 being 1 or 2 years, it's unlikely to be released, I reckon, for 18 months to 2 years. I'm sure I'm going to regret saying that because it will be somewhere either side. But something like 90 to 95% of the patches that have been committed to Drupal 8 in the past 8-9 months were immediately committed to Drupal 7 as well. So if you are looking to get involved, like, you will see things improving in Drupal 7 as well, and you will be able to use that maybe within a month, because Drupal 7 releases are coming out every month now for bug fixes and security. So it's like there's some things that you kind of, you're going to have to wait for, but a lot of things you won't. So if you are interested in getting involved, then you will see improvements that you will be able to use within the next few weeks. even though the issue might be against 8.x, if you're fixing bugs, those will go back into releases you're using now. Like, although we're talking about Drupal 8, the code base is exactly the same as Drupal 7 at the moment. There's only some very minor changes. So everything that's happening there is currently applicable to both. That will change pretty soon, because I think we're just getting past that point. But there'll still be plenty you can work on if you want Drupal 7 to be better for you.
I think probably my closing thought would be that this is long-term stuff. You know, it's not like these aren't changes that are going to be happening, you know, tomorrow. But at the same time, you know, looking back in history, the early conversations and the brainstorming and the architectural planning for what became fields in core in Drupal 7 actually started in like 2004 and 2005 at some of the first Drupal cons in Europe. Really big changes that require a shift in thinking and a shift in vision, those don't happen immediately. And even in Drupal's past, we've had these sort of percolating processes. And these conversations have also been going on for a while. They've just sort of become more visible, you know, in the past probably several weeks to maybe a month. But it's not crazy new stuff coming out of nowhere either. I think just as the community grows and there's a larger group of people that are sort of getting a peek at this kind of discussion and seeing it as it goes on.
Well, for me personally, I still have a huge issue with the core maintenance. So given what we are currently doing and given that we are really running short on code gardeners and those people fall behind and are burning out, I think the only short-term solution that can be applied here reasonably is that we need more people to review patches, not submit patches. At the same time, the people who are actively going through those patches, the gardeners basically, those people will have to focus on RTPC patches only. This is somewhat concerning because this means that there's a high chance that you only get an in-depth review of your proposed change when you actually thought that you were done with it. And there's going to be a high chance that you are then told, okay, you are all wrong. You need to start from scratch. And that's possibly demotivating for core contributors. But at this point in time, I don't really see a way how we can handle the load differently. Yeah, that's basically my wrap-up of the current situation.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, having office hours and having possibly mentoring where there are people that are coming in and having a chance to get mentored by people, you know, mentoring takes time and, you know, it kind of takes some effort for people to show that they're truly interested before, you know, someone will really take them on as a mentee. But it sounds like there is this need for people to come in and fill this gap of this ecosystem, which is the not necessarily writing the code, but just serving and being able to have a discerning eye in terms of applying patches and testing them and just seeing that it's actually fixing these bugs. So,
right. We already have people who jumped the gun and are reviewing patches for typos and coding style and stuff like that. This is what we actually achieved already. But at the same time, the demand and enforcement of getting more contributors into core is not going to solve that problem. Having people who really understand this complex beast of our system. So the topmost issue we need to resolve somehow, but I don't have answers myself. We'll have to go with mentoring in some way, but my personal perspective is that mentoring to that level of detail and extent is kind of only going to work if you pick one or two persons and really make them think. So it's not like you can get a crowd of 50 or 100 people around you and say, yeah, look at these patches and walk through them or something. So this is kind of the issue we need to resolve. And I'm almost on the stance that we don't need more contributors, we need better contributors.
Right. Cool. Well, I just wanted to thank Catch and Eaton and Sun for coming on today. And yeah, I think these are important issues to talk about, even though they are high level. I think, you know, having this high level vision and focus will kind of help other core contributors and people who are listening to possibly get inspired to kind of jump in and help out. And yeah, so thanks for joining us. And yeah, goodbye, everybody.
Adios.
Goodbye.